Metro, ESPN 94.5 FM. This is Josh Nagel filling in momentarily for Kenny B, who should be here pretty soon. Yeah, there's traffic delays, all kinds of stuff going on out there with the weather. I think he should be here anytime. In the meantime, I'll just get us going because we got another full slate of NFL games, one college football game, but a whole bunch of bowl games to talk about, including Nevada's selection in the Potato Bowl. We'll get to all that, and plus also actually a really good UFC card tomorrow night. I'm hoping if once Ken gets here, he'll provide us a little time to talk about that. So in the meantime, we'll just get going on all these topics. We have some of the same contributors from last week. Tommy Thompson, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Oh, of course. I love being here. Love talking all the fun sports. And we got JD over there getting, looks like he's getting himself.
John Stevens is with us also. I believe he's up there at the Calneva Bar getting one of those $2 Bud Lights or whatever it is.
He's waddling over here with some of those White Claws that he likes to drink so much. So he'll be enjoying it.
All right. So he'll be here any minute, and we will do the official introductions accordingly. But it's looking like, you know, there's FCS action, James Madison, Northern Iowa, if you're into that sort of thing. It's funny, is the FCS, they've been doing this playoff for years with a whole bunch of teams before, you know, Division I got that 14 playoff. Some of those games are super exciting. If you get to know some of the best teams usually play Division I, like Northern Iowa, they've beaten Iowa State a couple years ago. Some of the teams you get to know because they'll play decent Division I teams. And you'll see these matchups. James Madison always seems to be in there. But sometimes, you know, if you're just looking around for something, in the, like, for instance, tomorrow morning for the Army-Navy game, these FCS playoff games are all over the place. They're usually super exciting, go down to the wire, and it seems like when it comes down to constructing a proper playoff, they had the right idea before, you know, the big guys did.
Yeah, I always notice it's always fun to take the team that had the toughest FBS school, you know, games that they played. Like you said, Northern Iowa, I actually thought they were going to give up a little bit better of a fight than this 10-0 deficit they're facing right now, but still a lot of time left in this ball game, so we'll see.
John Stevens is officially here, and he's doing a live mic check on the air.
Luckily, I have unbelievable knowledge of the back streets in this town, or else I would have never made it here.
Nice. The group or the town?
Both.
Right, well, yes. Both of them are it come in handy from
time to time. I'm in with both of them.
Right. So anyway, what's John, so we were just talking about, we're going to get to all the bowls and everything, but quickly hitting on the FCS. But one thing I wanted to mention, I think, speaking of which, on the Kenny B ESPN Handicapping Facebook page, still is gaining some traction among our listeners and other contributors. I want to say I believe you're the one who set that out there. Like, what would be a projected if the NCAA, if FCS had 16 teams in the matchup?
Yeah, that was actually Kenny that did that one. But, yeah, that's something I've been wanting to do forever.
We've been talking about it all the time.
All the time. It looks awesome.
I'm a proponent of just the eight, of moving to eight. But in years past, when obviously they're not doing it, maybe they will, maybe they won't. But the hypothetical is something I've always thrown out there. Look, if they just had eight, this would be the 1-8 matchup. We all said, wow, this is incredible. Yeah. But there was a hypothetical, like March Madness-style thing that included 16. And you look at that and go, how much fun would that
be? The 2-15 was Ohio State-Alabama, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
And a healthy Alabama can win that game. So
I mean, all the games in there, too. It was pretty crazy. Like, you would think, like, Notre Dame's in there. Like, yeah, they have two losses, and, you know, it's not bad. I mean, they lost, you know, at Michigan. You would think a healthy Notre Dame team with the right draw, they might be able to do something.
Yeah, for sure.
The whole thing's fascinating, but
it'll never happen. I doubt even eight happens. Maybe it will.
I think so.
I think eight will be in the future.
I like the idea
because there's so much sentiment for eight.
I like the idea of six as well. You just give the top two a bye there and have that the four play it out. But I would love to have eight.
Yeah, I think so too. Because when you just look at the criteria that happens, there's usually, you know, the teams are right on the outskirts. They're deserving. I think it would be really easy to slot those positions. And then if there was a close call between the eight and nine, well, that's fine. But this year, I mean, for instance, if it was, you know, Georgia, whoever got left out, you would never feel too bad for it in my mind because you can imagine they blew it. They probably have three losses or one really bad loss. It's like Georgia lost to South Carolina. So I just think, though, there'd be a pretty obvious fit. When you come into last week, it was really exciting and everything. But to me, it shouldn't have been like, for instance, imagine if Utah had won. I mean, obviously they didn't, but imagine Utah had won and Georgia had won. Then what? I mean, does, you know, Utah, a one-loss conference champion, really belong out? You know what I mean? There's just
let me pull up this bracket real quick.
Does Oklahoma belong out? I just mean all those, you know, deserving teams. I just think it would be easy to fill eight slots. It doesn't create that many more. They worry about the logistics and creating more games of the students away from studies or whatever. It only creates a couple more games.
When you look at the 116, obviously it's one-sided matchup, but LSU versus Appalachian State. Just have Appalachian State have that opportunity.
Exactly.
And, would be pretty cool.
And App State's by far the best Group of Five team. I mean, who knows? They could hold their own in that. I mean, they'd probably be like a what, at least 17-point dog on a neutral field?
Ben White won 64 teams. I don't know if we're going to go that far, Benny, but you never know.
But still, App State's solid. I'm just saying, they would give LSU a bigger fight than I think most people realize.
Yeah. I mean,
so run through the others real quick.
Yeah, so the 116 would be LSU, Appalachian State. Just going down the way, the 8-9 matchup would be Wisconsin-Florida. That's a good matchup.
Yeah.
5-12 would be Georgia-Utah.
Good one.
Another great game.
4-13 would be Oklahoma-Boise State.
Rematch of the famous
on the other ball. Side of the bracket, the 215 would be Ohio State, Alabama, like we talked about. This is an interesting one. The 7-10 matchup would be Baylor versus Penn State. That'd be something.
Great game.
6-11 would be Oregon versus Memphis, and this is a barn burner right here. 3-14, another one that the 14 could actually win this game. Auburn versus Clemson.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yep.
Yeah, no, don't want to watch this.
So that's a good one. So what do you think, John? How crazy would that be with just that lineup you announced with the future odds and you know, all the different sites and the spreads? Of course, for the gambling aspect would just be awesome. But those are just amazing games and make it happen. Like, say, hey, I'm just in favor of, you know, four is so razor thin. Like, and there was no chaos or whatever last week. But and that's doubtful to happen. For instance, Clemson's never going to lose to Virginia.
Yeah.
If you just imagine for a moment if somehow all that happened, if Georgia had won, if Clemson had lost, if you can just imagine the highest chaos equation of last week.
Yeah.
Right. Utah winning, Baylor winning. Then what? And you're just going to have so many deserving teams that are left out. Say, just let the deserving teams in. And then when there is a pretty clear drop off the cliff from eight on, I mean, let those
teams. I think
teams,
eight is fair. The reason I'd want that 16 is, like I said, for an Appalachian State or a Boise State or, you know, the 2010 Wolfpack for example. I mean, they finished number 11 in the BCS that year when the BCS existed. They'd be in this thing. So, for those type of schools to get an opportunity at one of the big ones, I think it would be pretty cool.
But instead, as it stands now, we've got the top four, and let's face it, those are the top deserving four. No real controversy there. So you got LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, and Oklahoma. And, I mean, for what it's worth, to me, it's the deserving four, but sort of similar to last year, to Oklahoma is clearly the hanger-on. Like, they're the one that doesn't belong. It, to me, it's similar. Oklahoma against LSU is the same to Oklahoma, Alabama last year. They might be able to cover or hang in there with their offense, but they're looking at like probably like a 52-40 type of game.
What's the total in that game?
I haven't. See, I
have
it right in front of me. Let me see if I can pull that up. But, Oklahoma, LSU, 75.5.
Right.
The Clemson, Ohio State. So if you're familiar, I just give the spreads real quick. But right now, in fact, I thought it opened at 10. I was saying LSU's minus 13. Same spread as Alabama, basically.
Uh-huh.
75.5 total of that. Oklahoma, LSU's the 1-4 game. The 2-3 game, Clemson, Ohio State. Clemson actually opened as a dog. They flipped that spread now, though. Clemson's now minus 2 over Ohio State with a 63.5 spread. Actually, geez, at first blush, I want to think under. Those teams could play a little defense.
A little bit, yeah.
But so remember, a couple of years back, they actually met in the playoff in Clemson. Boat raced him. I think this Ohio State team is better, but, I mean, who knows. But still, nonetheless, the four deserving teams are in, but I just think you could find eight deserving teams as well.
Oh, absolutely, you can find eight.
But we'll probably do a little overview of some of the bowls later. Of course, most of the bowls are so far out that we'll have longer segments of future shows to dedicate to them. But let's go to the most relevant one to our audience now. Let's talk about Nevada's bowl. So last week in the games wrap up, you got championship Saturday, then essentially bowl selection Sunday, and teams are filling their slots or whatnot. Curious where the Wolfpack would go, and they end up in the Idaho Potato Bowl as were among the options that were speculated about. You know what's weird, John, is the Potato Bowl used to be on the first weekend, like with the first cluster of games,
yeah.
And now it's like close to the last.
January 3rd.
Yeah, it's Friday, January 3rd. And for what it's worth, if you're one of those bowl junkies, like this is going to be after all the playoffs and everything, after the semifinals but before the championship, and you're just kind of killing time in between. This is the only one, you know, game on a Friday night. So for what it's worth, the college football world will be watching because it's the only game. But so up on the Smurf Turf in Boise, we drew the Ohio Bobcats of the MAC conference. And I got to say, it's weird watching Ohio this year. They were a huge letdown. They were a favorite to win the conference. I thought they'd be pretty good, John. They had a lot of returning talent.
Mm-hmm.
And they made the championship game a couple years ago. And their quarterback, Nathan Rourke, was one of the more experienced guys in the country, a guy who can run and pass. And just early on, they looked completely out of sync. But with a couple weeks left to go in the season, they kind of put their act together. They played Miami of Ohio, which eventually won the championship. But Ohio had them at home as a 7-point favorite, and they just fell apart. I mean, they were out of sync from the start, actually got blown out on their own turf, had to win their last two games just to become bowl eligible, and they just beat up on some MAC also-rans. I think one of them was Bowling Green, right, and the other might have been Kent State.
Uh-huh.
But they finally started, at least if you're following Ohio, I mean, at least start getting their offense going. Because all year it's weird. Rourke has just been great. He was inaccurate, turnover prone. They didn't look like the same team that's usually real dangerous, real hard to stop. It's never really got it going. But so they slide in there at 6-6. They're, you know, in the same bowl, and you get understand Nevada, as most of our followers are aware, 7-5, lost that game to UNLV. The big thing here is the other day the spreads got released, and Ohio was sitting there at 6.5, total is 58. The suspensions got announced stemming from the brawl, and it looks like about four regular Nevada starters are gone either for full or half the game. And in the wake of that, the spread jumped a full point. So it went from 6.5 to the 7.5 where it is now, 58. And, John, what do you think? To me, this team's so unpredictable that it's like, you know what, at first blush, I don't have a whole lot of faith in them really getting up for this thing. But at the same time, I've been pleasantly surprised. Who knows, with this long and this much extra practice, maybe they put the bad feelings behind them from UNLV and show up in this one with who they've got. I don't want to touch it, but then again, I wouldn't have told you Nevada was going to win at San Diego State or Fresno either. So what do you think? Would you consider taking these points?
It's tough. I mean, with Daniel Brown and Gabriel Sewell being among those suspended, two of the most important players on that defense, that's rough. And like I said on our Facebook page, I guess the UNLV team was the whole team was suspended since they're not playing in a bowl game. But what kind of repercussions do they have, first of all? And I don't know. I'm not touching it. I'm sure I'm going to end up making a bet with it. I'll probably just bet the Pack just because it is the Pack. I like that they get this extra couple weeks of practice time. I know Coach Norvell likes that as well. But, I mean, I don't know.
That's usually the biggest benefit to getting into bowls is free practice time.
And letting go of Jeff Castile and most of the defensive staff.
I didn't actually mention that, but you're right. There's another thing to consider in terms of the morale of the program.
I think we're looking at the wrong side of the ball.
I was going to say, to tell you the truth. Well, you never know, but that came down. I feel like, as I've mentioned, I thought the offensive play calling got better when Coach Norvell took that over himself. Defensively, but, if you want to have a scapegoat or just do whatever, the under-the-bus transition. I mean, we did have among the worst secondaries in the country, and who knows, maybe these things aren't going right. I'm never in favor of just, let's make our statement about who's at fault by that change. But it happened instantly, so here's the thing. So the players suspended. The first thing is, with the coaches who were let go, what I'm curious when it comes to a team's motivation in a bowl game is, how well-liked were those coaches?
Yeah.
I just mean, because if some of the players really like, then are you going to put your heart and soul into a bowl game?
No, it's a tough thing. You just never know. These are 19, 20-year-old kids, so it's it's hard to get in their head. And
were you surprised at the wholesale coaching?
Totally was. I was caught off guard by it. I thought Castillo was doing a pretty good job the time that he's been here. The defense, we've lived through some horrific defense over the years at the University of Nevada, and you're usually able to put a Band-Aid on that by scoring 40 points a game, and that's just not the case anymore. But I was surprised by it. I'm sure they're going to be motivated. There's a bad taste in their mouth for what happened, losing to the Rebels again. I'm not over it. I hope they're not over it either. So, I don't know. They're going to a place that they're familiar with, even though they haven't been there in a few years. Going to the turf, I wouldn't say a home field, but it's a place they're more familiar with than the Bobcats would be. So I don't know. Frank Solich has been a good coach for a long time.
Now he's been at Ohio for half a century.
It's crazy.
It's been forever since he was at Nebraska, but he's made a living at Ohio for like 15 years, I want to say, or close to it.
It's an
initial thoughts.
The initial thoughts, I mean, even at the 6.5, now at 7.5, I don't like it one way or another. But the initial thoughts, losing the coaching staff on the defense and the players that we're losing, and are they both done for the full game or half game?
Yeah, Sewell and Daniel Brown are the entire full game, unfortunately.
To me, that 58.5 looks a little light because you're playing a MAC team that likes to throw the ball very well. We already have a weak secondary. I think we're going to score maybe in the second half only to cover that, but I'm probably going to bet the over as long as it doesn't change too much.
All right. So I say we'll see how it shakes out with the spread betting and what way the line eventually moves. But I'm also curious, again, from the Ohio standpoint, they'll come in, I think, with a little more momentum just because they were winning games at the end of the season. But I was surprised. They're a team I always keep an eye on, and they tend to start a little slow. But then they get their act together. Usually you see them toward end of the season, and they're one of those clubs that's just hard to stop. I mean, defenses have a hard time getting off the field against them. They can put up some big numbers, and with pretty much the most experienced quarterback in other skilled players coming back. I thought Ohio was a clear favorite to win the MAC. It's worth noting, Miami of Ohio was decent too. The team they lost to at home ended up winning the whole championship. But it was just bizarre because I remember I watched Ohio's full game against Buffalo and Miami of Ohio and a couple other times. And they just looked – I mean, Rourke, who had always been reliable, he got hesitant in the pocket. He was taking lots of sacks, committing lots of turnovers. I know they're pretty disappointed with 6-6, understandably. I'm also curious, do they come into this bowl game with a little more momentum?
Well, I would say so. You can't come in with any less momentum than the Pack has.
I was going to say, it's a low bar to clear if you're looking at the opponent. That's exactly. Why, John, that's why I'm curious. That's why I'm so hesitant. It's not like I want to lay these points against the Pack, but I wonder if Nevada is, one of those candidates for, not a very strong bowl performance.
I think you're able to reset. If this was, like you said, where it used to be one of the first bowl games.
Yeah, if this was next Saturday.
I think that would be a little more worrisome. But the fact that you have so much time in between, I think you can reset a little bit, and they might install some new plays, some gadget plays, have some fun with it, and just go out and say, you know what, it's a one game season now. Let's end on a high note, get this bitter rubble taste out of our mouth, and move forward and look forward to 2020. So, I think that's in the Pack's favor that there is this time off.
All right, that makes sense. So how about
from a Pack perspective, I can't speak to what the Bobcats are doing.
How about we do a quick look ahead, by the way, Nevada basketball. I want to say they're at home next Wednesday, but the other night they took a pretty good beating at BYU.
Yeah.
I kind of saw that coming only because it's weird. I didn't think it'd be that bad. But given the size, in fact, it's kind of funny because actually the mismatch I thought would kill them was Yoeli Childs, and he had a bad game. I mean, they did a good job stopping him. He got 0 points at halftime, big 6'10", BYU guy who almost went pro last year. He was suspended for part of this year. But he's probably – your likely conference player of the year for them. I thought they would just have a matchup problem, but they were doing a nice job swarming to him. And the other team shot the ball well. It was just a weird thing where eventually BYU just made a few more shots. Childs came on in the second half. But before you know it, you're looking at whatever it was, a 35-point loss. Do you think Nevada has any – well, they'd been rolling before that.
Yeah.
Do you think there's any lingering effects from that loss?
No, I don't. I think that's just you come back home, play Texas Southern at home before you go to San Francisco to the Chase Center and play St. Mary's. I think that's just – it's one of those games that happens. And I agree with Chris Murray that was – they had to win that shot if there was any chance of them getting an at-large bid because they've played four top 100 teams this year and they've lost all of them.
Yeah.
And most of them weren't even
rolling,
close.
By the way. Pretty impressive performance against Air Force.
Yeah, and it's the way this team is constructed, if they're not hitting those outside shots, they're just not going to win. It's just flat out they're not going to win. You're going to live and die by the three. This team is, so – I don't know. I wasn't shocked. I was shocked that they only scored 41. Was it 41 points?
Something
I was
like
shocked
that
they only scored that many points. I wasn't shocked that they had trouble in BYU. I bet BYU that night.
That's true. The line jumped a little. I didn't even bother me. It opened like 6.5.
I got eight. I had 8.5.
Eight.
I got 8.5, and I didn't even flinch. They were down 9 in 5 minutes, but it didn't shock. That's a tough place to play. Always has been. You're playing against 37-year-old guys, and it didn't shock me in the least. Now
it seems like T.J. Hawes is like in his 10th year as the starting point guard.
And come home Texas Southern, a very beatable opponent at home, be able to get back in front of your home crowd, and I expect them to have a nice performance on Wednesday. It's Wednesday, right? Yeah, Wednesday.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt that the total was pretty heavy, too.
Yeah, the total was like 153 or whatever.
153
and
a half.
About
and it just
50-odd points short of that.
playing at BYU with a pretty good defensive team.
Kenny had an unfortunate post on our Facebook page.
How
could this possibly go under?
That was his?
It was not me.
It went over by shooting, 3 for 23 from the three-point line?
How you'll know. I'll put my name on it if I make a declaration like that. But, that was tough.
Yeah, well, we've had better predictions. But I'll say, hey, for someone who does it every day in a public forum, sometimes there's nothing you can do.
Exactly. It happens, man.
Exactly. I mean, there are times where, it's an embarrassing thing. But with what I do on Sportsnet, I think I was telling a friend this.
Oh, you're out there, buddy.
Yeah, every day. But I think this was funny, though. It's one of those, a baseball thing. It was a pretty good matchup. I would say Red Sox, Yankees, right?
Uh-huh.
Pretty good starting pitching. And the total was like 9.5, whatever. So I put out a plan to under. And I kid you not, the first score after the first inning was 6-5. So I'm like, okay. Well, that's out there. Yeah, the final
is that when they played in London?
No, it was this was a regular game in a regular stadium, but still.
I've never been a Red Sox
game. You put something out there like that. It's like, it seems like you're never going to live it down, but we all have bad calls.
Oh, it happens, man. Absolutely.
All right. We're going to go off to our first break. Hopefully we'll see Ken Barler here in a minute, but we'll be right back. William Hill Sports Show, ESPN 94.5 FM. All right, welcome back to the Wee Mill Sports Show on ESPN 94.5. I'm having Josh Diego with John Stevens, Tommy Thompson. We're waiting on Ken Barler, who should be here at some point. In the meantime, before the break, we talked a little bit about Nevada's bowl game. Again, just a quick overview. Invitations to the famous Idaho Potato Bowl against the Ohio Bobcats, and the opening spread, or I should say current spread, is Ohio minus 7.5 with a total of 58. I'm sure between now and then, since we have a few weeks, we'll have more information and opinions on this game. And moving forward, though, this huge 40-game bowl slate, we'll take a little bit of an initial overview look at that. But how about the one game and only FBS game in existence tomorrow, the Army-Navy traditional rivalry game, 120th meeting between the military academies, and the Commander-in-Chief's trophy is on the line. So whoever wins that gets to have the trophy that signifies the best military academy for that year. And, you know, it's just one of those traditional things. I mean, they get the stage to themselves on this Saturday, the one after championship weekend before the bowls. If you're really into college football, you're kind of jonesing for the action. This is all we've got. So let's give it a quick look. Navy is minus 10.5 with a total of 40. A couple of key facts about this game. It's crazy. This game's notorious for going under. It's actually gone under 13 consecutive times. It gets close to the total. A couple of them, 21-17. The total's always, you know, keeps dropping. And one of these is going to go over, but this total's 40. Let's see if it goes under for a 14th straight time. Army's won 3 in a row, but before that, Navy had won 14 in a row. This year, Navy's 9-2, second place in the AAC. Their only losses were to AAC champion Memphis, 16th-ranked Notre Dame. Army, coming off a 10-win year, took a huge step back. They went 5-7 at one point, had a 5-game losing streak. 6 of their 7 losses by single figures. The only one by more than that was to Hawaii to close out the season. So they're kind of disappointing. They're not going to a bowl game, win or lose, but this basically is their bowl game. Navy's headed to the a bowl game against Kansas State. They're actually pretty nice. This should be a pretty entertaining matchup. Liberty Bowl. So
it's a good bowl.
Yeah, it's a nice one. Actually, the teams play a similar style. And this one's kind of funny. You would think it would be stupid to go against 13 times in a row that the game's gone under. But, John, I do believe if there's one that's got the potential to go over, it's this one. And this is because, one, both teams, if you follow them at all, these triple option military academies, you know that both Army and Navy have actually interjected a little more of the big play pass into their assault, so they're not so predictable. Navy's been particularly throwing it more. Army, too, so they kind of hit you. You know, they've been doing all their running plays and they hit you over the top. And when those plays connect, and they usually do, they go for touchdowns. Navy's been pretty decent on defense. Of course, both these teams do nothing but play and play against the triple options. Like, well, there's only so much you can do. But they move the ball against each other. And I would say Army's got a pretty glaring weakness in that their defense has been, you know, gashed quite a bit. Of course, usually against the teams that could throw it pretty well, got them pretty good. But I just mean, I think both teams are vulnerable enough. And imagine this. In a four-quarter college football game, even with 90% runs, 40 points isn't much. I mean, I think it could go over.
Why do the academies, including Air Force, run the triple option?
Oh, you know why? Because it's the easiest way to bridge the gap between them and, you know, the Florida States of the world. It's like when you're a Division I team with scholarships and everything, they don't have the resources and they're not going, you know, the best, you know, athlete that Army Navy can get is not going to be as good as the 5-star guy on,
sure,
you know, like I said, Iowa or whoever else. So the way you do it is that's a strength in numbers thing. It's an effective thing with what's going to be sort of a limited baseline and ceiling of talent that you can get. It's the most effective strategy you can get out of them, and it's been kind of proven to work.
Although you mentioned Florida State, I think Air Force and Navy would be Florida State this year.
Yeah, but you know what?
Maybe
you know what would be hilarious, John? I mean,
Coast
what
Guard
if?
Beat
okay, so let's put it this way. I mean, Army's coach is Jeff Monken. Even though they're 5-7 this year, he's done a great job. He turned them around completely, right? All the winning years, 10 wins last year. So he's a candidate for a lot of open jobs. He's rumored to be the front runner at Boston College.
Uh-huh.
So let's say he takes that job. So wouldn't it be funny if, let's just say, Army ended up, you know, hiring Lane Kiffin? I mean, just to say theoretically, because he's already at Ole Miss or whatever, or Mike Norvell. Can you imagine? Yeah. So this time-honored tradition of the triple option working out for these teams, if they just one of them went to the run and
that's
shoot.
That's what I'm saying.
It would be hilarious. But here's the thing, though. I don't think they have the talent to do it. I don't think the protection would hold up. I don't think you could get, you know.
Of the three, I watch Air Force the most, obviously, being – Mountain West member. Air Force always has that one, maybe two passes where they just pick it at the right time and just hit somebody
watch
up top.
Their quarterback's numbers, it's 3 for 3 for 190 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Exactly. And Navy has a little bit in there. I'm not so sure about Army. But
Malcolm Perry's great, by the way. Yeah, he was a borderline Heisman candidate.
I would love one time one of these teams just to come out and just air it out the whole time, just run just nothing but pass. They'd be shell shocked.
Exactly.
There's nothing you can do.
You know how many passing yards Army averages this year?
57.
86.
It's like Reed High back when I was there with Brandon Blackburn.
And Navy's just a tad bit taller with 103.
Yeah, and it's...
But think about that, though. Even in military academy, 100 yards a game, that's a lot for them.
Yeah.
And it shows you they're throwing it more than usual. Listen, Navy, that's the only way. They had 3 wins last year. So their coach was Ken Niumatalolo, is that correct?
Yeah, yeah. Sounds exactly right.
No, because I did a lot of work on this game for Sportsline, but he was saying, hey, look, I had to look myself, and speaking of firing defensive guys, he did the same thing. They were awful, fired his whole defensive staff. And said, what else could I do differently? And look at who they're up against every week. I mean, you've got, you know, your Memphis or Cincinnati, Tulane, some good teams. Yeah. It's like, you know, yeah, we've got to be a little more varied. So he decided to mix in the big play pass a little more. He's got a good athlete at quarterback. It's worked out to not be so one-dimensional.
Well, and I was reading today about the defensive changes that he made, and one of the biggest things he did is during the offseason he called in Bill Belichick. And
heard of him?
The story was he came into his office and Bill was just rambling off.
How do you feel Navy?
How do you film? Yeah.
Is that what he asked?
Well, he'd film Army. But,
well, you know what I mean.
But, yeah, so he incorporated a lot of the stuff that Belichick was able to tell him, and that's, I mean, if you look at Navy's defense this year, it's significantly improved.
Yeah, and again, that was a huge thing for them. They still give up some points, but so does everybody. I mean, they got smashed by Notre Dame. They were on fire. They gave up, I think, 35 to Memphis. Fit, you know, top scoring teams in the country, so there's no real shame in that. But by and large, though, they've been super solid. So Navy turned it back around, 9-2, again, head to the Liberty Bowl. I was surprised Army didn't become bowl eligible. That last game was basically a pick 'em at Hawaii. I was like, you know what? Hawaii's going to have a hard time slowing them down. I actually bet Army, I think it was like +2.5. Oh, man. I mean, not only so.
Bet against Rolo?
I was going to say kudos to Nick Rolovich. They came out ready. I figure Hawaii already bowl eligible, might take the night off. They did not. Army looked terrible. They gave it like 50. It was 52-21, I want to say, or 52-31. So they got rolled, but again, a lot of big play passing you don't really have to worry about. But these teams have these, you know, the trick plays within the triple option where, you know, they give it off to the fullback who then throws. I mean, they have things that come out of it. I just think 24-17, it's got to go over one of these years. And like I mentioned, because of some of the defensive liabilities, because of some of the bigger plays in the passing game, I think this is the one. We'll see. You guys otherwise have a play. I'll put it this way, too. I also believe the underdog is covered in like 10 of 12.
Yeah.
So it goes to show you, whatever team's having the big year, the other team takes it more seriously.
We're just going against the grain then because you like it over. I just like Navy.
I was
going
to say Army with you know, the 3 straight wins in the series. Last year, they were the 2-touchdown favorite, and Navy kept it to 17-10.
Any sort of weather?
The underdog comes in. I want to check it out. Lincoln Financial Field, so the home field of the Eagles is where this game is going to be played. And, yeah, I think there was snow last year. There's usually some pretty bad weather. Last I checked on it, of course, we'll find out tomorrow. But yeah. I actually heard it was going to be cold but clear, not the snow that we've been having.
Cool.
Yeah, if I'm going to play it, I'm taking, you know, laying the 10.5. I don't think there's any way Navy doesn't cover this.
All right, I'm taking Army.
All right,
perfect.
As I say, the history suggests, I mean, the safest thing, if you took underdog and under, you're going to cash that parlay like 8 out of 10 times with the way this history has played out. So, but, again, I may just go – just a little contrarian on the total. I think this could be the one we see go over. But regardless, let's check out some of the bowl games we mentioned. By the way, William Hill Bowl Challenge is already out. This is a fun contest you do every year. All 40 bowl games, you pick your favorite 20 against the spread. The cards, you know, built in with the parlay odds, just like your weekly parlay card would be. So we use those for ultimately grading. Even if the line moves 6 points, you get graded on the line that comes out here. But you pick 20 bowl games against the spread for $20, and whoever has the highest score wins the contest for $20,000. It's a fun little way to stay in action. I know, you know, over time, and William Hill's had this contest for years now. It's funny. So if your first card is kind of bad, if you're going like 4-6 or whatever, no chance to win, you know, you just help yourself to another card. I know there have been times where I've probably entered that sucker at least, you know, 20-ish times.
Yeah.
Sometimes more.
Now, pre-contest.
And I'm yet to win.
Pre-contest, I always bet a 20-team big teaser, $10 20-team big teaser. And, you know, I'd flirt with it. The closest I ever got, I went 19 for 21. You remember when Virginia Tech and Clemson played in, I forget what kind of bowl game. It was a nice bowl game. Clemson was up 14-0, going in to score, fumbled. Virginia Tech took it all the way back, and they ended up winning like 62-20. Well, I remember it specifically because we were at Louis. It was. And Kenny, my back's the TV, and Kenny B goes, "So if Virginia Tech just went 99 yards, scored a touchdown, would that interest you? I was like, nope. And that's exactly what happened. They just ended up boat racing them. So 19 for 20 was as close as I ever got on that 20 for 20.
Damn. You know, it's funny. I did the same thing, but I hedged it as well. I went 19 for 20 once.
That's the thing I didn't hedge.
But the national championship game, I remember, I think it was the Oklahoma-LSU when I had the underdog. And they actually got blown out. I'm like, that sucks. I took a ton of points. Like you said, they got smashed. Thankfully, I hedged on the end. But you know what? I want to cash that ticket.
Yeah.
Like 20-20 at the big teaser would have been cooler. So I got my hedge money. I'm like, but that blows. Because, yeah, I had this nice big teaser that would have been like a couple, I think,
exactly.
Whatever, 1500
or and that
something.
Was the thing. Yeah, I would have won, what, $1,000 off the $10. But I, at that point, there was – I think that was like game 16 of the 20. So I wasn't quite
to
the point.
Oh, so you're now all to the finish
line. If it's the last one I'd have done, I think it was about game 16. But the contest, my point with this is the contest kind of eliminates the need to bet something like that.
You exactly.
You can just go and enter that.
And
it's really
keep,
cool.
You can keep doing these cards so long as there's 20 games left. And I often do that where it's like, okay, first – so with 40 games, you get to take such a nice variety of the games you like or whatever. But you may end up having records that aren't so great. So then when it comes right down to it, there's only you get to where there's only 21, 22 games left. It's like, well, that narrows your options. But at least you can still play the card. And
speaking of 40 games, did you guys happen to see the ESPN list of most interesting to least interesting of the 40 bowl games?
I saw the list. I didn't look too far into it.
Where would you reckon the famous
39.
Idaho? That's exactly what it was.
I would have guessed.
Yes.
What was number 40?
Which one's worse?
40 was Wyoming, Georgia State.
Oh, okay. That's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, you can make an argument.
The write-up on Nevada versus Ohio was this is Exhibit A on why there are too many bowl games.
And that's the exact reason why it would be great to put 8 to 16 teams in there, because as much as
in
a Nevada fan, it's great to say, hey, we're going to a bowl. But
at least
does
Nevada,
it matter?
At least Nevada was overqualified, though, because 7 wins get you in.
Yeah.
There's been,
with a win against
a
Big Ten
where,
school.
Right. Actually, Ohio would be left out. There's been years where there's more bowls than bids or bowl-eligible teams, the bids available. And usually a 6-win MAC team is out. So Ohio's lucky. Because actually Miami of Ohio last year had 6 wins, didn't get in. And so there seems to got no bowls at all. This year they're getting opportunities.
Can the Pac wear all blue on the blue turf? Because I know Boise can't in league. Let's hope so.
But guys, I'm just curious. So what stood out? So we've had some bowls come out last Sunday, some spreads that have been out for a while. I'm curious if anything jumped right off the page for you guys. But there's a couple that caught my attention. For instance, by the way, just out of pure interest, the Chris Peterson Bowl. So he's out of there watching. Of course, they match him up with Boise State in the Las Vegas Bowl for his finale until he turns the chapter and goes wherever he's going to go.
I love that game.
I do, too. But here's what's funny. It's like -3.5, 49.5. You know what my first instinct was? Like, dang, that's a nice little – Washington's been kind of letting down this year. Nice little price on the underdog there. Then, on second thought, like, you know what? Chris Peterson's not losing the Chris Peterson Bowl.
Is he coaching
Washington.
The game?
Yeah.
Oh,
and it's going to the
that.
Final thing. So I'm thinking, you know what? Washington -3.5 is how I'm going to have to go.
I thought he was effective immediately, and then what's his first
I think he's seen it through until the
That's pretty cool.
Game.
Yeah, he's
well, even
not
if,
losing
Even
that
if
game.
He was leaving and going to the AC department, he was – going to come back for this game.
Well, that's good, and his heart is still in Boise, and he didn't want to leave. It took him forever to leave. He got offered the USC job, for God's sakes, and ended up going and UCLA, and ended up going to Washington. But I'm interested to see what his plans are, why he chose to leave when he's leaving, because he's a young enough dude. They had the ESPN also had the rankings of the 150 greatest coaches of all time, and Peterson was. He was up in the mid-50s, mid-60s, I think. Coach Alt was 99.
He deserves it. You know what? Because we forget about him. It's like, you talk about the legendary.
Coach Alt should have been two.
The college football, Rushmore, whatever, of the modern day. Everyone, Saban, Urban Meyer, Dabo now. All those guys are easy to think of. Everyone forgets Peterson, but he deserves to be on there. And if not the Rushmore of current, he's not far behind. I mean, he's got to be of the last 20 years top five coach.
And
is that fair?
Boise always had a great program. And, from Dirk Cutter and Houston Nutt and Dan Hawkins and just Chris Peterson took it to an absolute different level.
They went from the nice little cutesy mid-major to, they're in the top 10 every year.
There's not a lot of times in my life I've rooted for Boise State, but I did in that Fiesta Bowl against Oklahoma. That was I was fired up like it was the Wolfpack right there. I was rooting for Boise State really hard that day, which is not easy for me to say. There's a couple of people that probably just drove off the road right there, Chris and Borders.
Well, we'll just say, for instance, by the way, that is the premier matchup, the first full weekend, that's Saturday, December 21st, that Mitsubishi Motors Las Vegas Bowl. So that's Washington, Boise State, Washington minus 3.5 with a total of 49.5. There's a bunch of other bowl games that we could go over. That weekend, actually, it looks like there's six, which is odd. There's usually only four in that first Saturday.
We can bust through.
But I guess with 40 total bowl games, that's, I guess they had to spread them out a little more, so there's six in that first weekend. We could, you know, browse through and look at some other value spots or whatnot. But how about we do that after our second break here? We're going to go off to a quick commercial. Join us again in just a minute here, ESPN 94.5 FM. All right, welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Sharp Daigle with John Stevens, Tommy Thompson. Before the break, we went over a few initial bowl games. Guys, let's just go through a few, see what stands out to us. But there's some pretty interesting matchups. So I mentioned that Washington-Boise State matchup is on the first Saturday of bowl games. It's next Saturday, December 21st. They actually kick off, but there's a pair of games on Friday as well. And now, believe there's ever been bowl games on that Friday before. So they're kind of adding these everywhere. But one interesting matchup, I know there's already been some point spread movement on, is Utah State and Kent State, which I find fascinating. That's in the Smoothie Cafe Frisco Bowl. As you say, that's Frisco, Texas. At first I wondered if it's San Francisco. Yeah. No, Frisco Bowl.
No, San Francisco would never let themselves be called Frisco.
Right, but what is the San Francisco Bowl game? The Kraft Hunger Bowl, is that thing still around? That's what at first I thought I was looking at. But
it's I don't know if
the Kraft
around.
Fight Hunger Bowl is, but it was just last year because it was TCU. It
still amazes me that when the Pack was there, we got 30-plus thousand to
But
they can't get 15,000 to Mackey.
Okay. Utah State opened up like 7.5. For some reason, this one jumped right away to like 9.5, which I thought was appropriate. Then it went all the way back down to 7. So there's already some wild steam on this with Kent State when it came back in. I thought part of it was, you know, Utah State's quarterback, Jordan Love, announced he was going pro, for better or worse. And yet, but he says he's going to play the bowl game, so it's not like he's sitting out, which would at first explain that kind of bowl, that kind of spread move. But regardless, I actually think, I've seen Kent State a few times. Weird. They're surprisingly competitive. Came out of nowhere because I think they won like two games last year. So they got the 6 wins, but I think Utah State does crush them.
I like the MAC Mountain West matchups. I think this is pretty cool. Because, you know, they're the kind of mirror images of each other in a lot of ways. You know, I don't know a whole lot about Kent these days. I've seen Utah State play. I've seen him play well. Jordan Love, that dude can absolutely play. I don't know about being turning pro. You know, I don't know if this Lamar Jackson is kind of the catalyst and saying, okay, I can do that. I can approximate some of that stuff. But it's in this particular, it's Utah State or nothing for me, just because of my knowledge of Utah State as opposed to my knowledge of Kent.
For what it's worth, by the way, these games will have kicked off by the time we're on the air next week, so I guess we might as well talk about them now. The other one, and there's no real interest in this for me, but the Maker's World Bahamas Bowl, and that's always historically been a crazy game. But the Charlotte 49ers, we're in Buffalo Bowls are in there. Buffalo was MAC runner-up last year. Buffalo's minus 6.5 with a total of 58. Kudos to Charlotte, because for the last few years, they've been one of the worst teams in the country.
Yeah.
To turn it around and get 6 wins, well, that's a huge thing for them. And that game's just pretty historic for crazy, you know, high scores or whatnot. Actually, we'll take it over, total 58, but no real interest. Kent State, Utah State. So Bahamas Bowl's at 11 in the morning next Friday, and the Frisco Bowl's at 4:30 our time. So, again, that game will be in progress by the time get going, if you're interested.
49ers versus Buffalo, this might be a Super Bowl preview right here.
Exactly. And kudos to Buffalo as well, because last year they were in the MAC championship, but they lost just about everybody off that team, and you thought, oh, it's going to be a serious rebuild here, but their coach did a good job. For them to still go 6-6 is a pretty big thing. So we mentioned next Saturday is that Las Vegas Bowl. Of course, we'll have time to talk about all these games on the air. We'll just skip what looks like a relatively mundane slate up until the following Friday, the 27th. It starts getting real good, right? Saturday is when those national semifinals happen. But on Friday, December 27th, there's a great slate of games. North Carolina Temple in the Military Bowl. North Carolina is minus 5. I'll just run through these and then guys can give me some feedback. But North Carolina minus 5, 53.5 is the total against Temple. Actually, I think Temple covers or wins that. Michigan State minus 4.5 against Wake Forest in the Pinstripe Bowl. I think Wake probably wins outright because I'm not big on Michigan State. Can barely score 7 points.
They about to have a coaching change?
They very well might. I'm surprised. I mean, Mark D'Antonio, I should say, his playoff appearance 4 years ago bought him a lot of slack, as it should. But I think the goodwill's dried up by now. I mean, they've been awful. We'll talk to anyhow, the Sports Texas, the Texas Bowl, it's now Texas A&M minus 7 against Oklahoma State with a total of 54. Wow. Iowa in the Holiday Bowl, Iowa minus 2 against USC.
We're going to do pump the brakes real quick.
So hold on, I'm just running through, and then I'll get to the feedback. So Iowa minus 2, total of 52 against USC. And one that Tommy actually mentioned during the break that he likes is the Cheez-It Bowl, Air Force minus 3 against Washington State, total of 67.5. But so by and large, it's a huge slate of entertaining games. You know, what stands out to you?
Well, you just mentioned the Cheez-It Bowl. I read that if the Pac had won that game against UNLV, they would have been in the Cheez-It Bowl.
So that would have been
against
the
Washington State
opponent.
That would have been fantastic.
Instead, we get the crazy dynamic of the most contrasting styles.
I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, triple option against the Air Raid.
It really is, and I like Air Force in that matchup.
I do too, because I think Washington State's sort of back to their soft selves.
They really are.
They haven't played any defense all year. I think Air Force runs them over, and Mike Leach has a habit of his team just not showing up at all.
As huge of a Mike Leach fan as I am, and I really am, I think the dude is great for college football, and he's an interesting cat. That team is just from that second half of the UCLA game till now. What are you doing? I don't even know what's going on there.
That's kind of funny. The Apple Cup, which that's another Chris Peterson legacy, the Washington Huskies people will love him forever.
Yeah.
He only lost to Leach once, and that was the first year where his team was rebuilding and Leach had a great team. He beat him every other time.
You got to do it.
And they were not only – those games were not even close, but just to me it goes to show you the gap between the two. But this Apple Cup looked like it might be competitive. Washington State took the opening kickoff, dinked and dunked down the field, like 12-play drive. They scored a touchdown. Like, oh, don't tell me the Huskies are in trouble here. Because I can't stand Mike Leach. I think he's a clown. He's all about himself. He doesn't care about the players. I think he just cares about his own ego. Wouldn't make me sad to see him leave the game at all. But, and Peterson just owns his soul, though. So I'm thinking they go down 7-0, and I'm laying 7.5 in the game. Like, oh, this is bad news. All Huskies at that point. I think it was 38-13, and they allowed 2 field goals the whole rest of the game. So I hope Air Force smashes them. But, Tommy, I think you were saying you'd like the total.
I like the over in that game. I think it's going to end up being a shootout, especially because I think Air Force is going to cover. Mike Leach is going to run that pass down the field, and they're going to score a lot.
It is 67.5, given the styles. I mean, both teams should be able to score pretty quickly. But how about some of the other matchups here? Oklahoma State, to me, whenever Gundy, you give them a chance to prepare as an underdog in a bowl game, I'll take the points there.
Yeah, and this is what I'm saying when I was wanting to pump the brakes on that. That's exactly my point is, you know, Mike Gundy, Kenny's old high school classmate with the greatest lettuce in the history of college football, playing against, you know, this used to be, I wouldn't say a rivalry, but they were a conference rival for a long time. Texas A&M and Oklahoma State, and it's a really cool match. What's the name of this bowl?
That's the Outdoors Texas Bowl.
Yeah, of course that's what it should be. I'm interested to see this game. I what's that total?
54.
Take that over. Let's go.
I would think. And the other one, by the way, so the Wake Forest Michigan State games, the Pinstripe Bowl, the one that's played at Yankee Stadium. It's always a pretty cool environment to see college football played there. Yeah. But again, I think Wake Forest had a bit of a letdown toward the end of the year. I was really surprised. They lost Bigot. They lost Syracuse. And it's just weird because early on in the season, they were supposed to be ACC contenders. They still do, though. I think at this point, I actually think they may have the better team than Michigan State. You've got, and again, North Carolina and Temple. So that's a huge lineup on Friday, December 27th, and then Saturday, December 28th is the showcase. We talked about the two national semifinals are that day, if you want to warm up beforehand. So before the Final Four essentially gets going, early in the morning you got 9 o'clock, you got the Camping World Bowl, you got Notre Dame and Iowa State.
Yeah.
Sweet, nice match. Notre Dame minus 3.5, total of 56. Again, Iowa State, really well coached. They're hard to get rid of, but I like the Irish there.
Yeah, you always have to worry about the Irish being a little overrated, a little overvalued, public.
You do.
You know, so, you look at the Cyclones and go, oh, the Cyclones. So, but I don't know. I think I'm going to Iowa State there.
I'd probably take Notre Dame, but I think the total 55 is a little high. I'd probably bet the under on that one, too.
All right, and then this next one is the same time, actually, 9 a.m. kickoff. Cotton Bowl Classic, Arlington, Texas.
Love it.
Penn State minus 7 against Memphis with a total of 60.5. And to me, it's just one of those, not to say the Memphis players won't be fired up, but they won the AAC championship. Their coach, Bell, not surprised, Mark Norvell, has been a...
Is he coaching the game?
I don't believe so. No, I think he's already gone. And he's been a prime candidate for other openings for a couple of years now. He jumps to Florida State. Penn State was better anyway. I like the Lions more now.
Yeah, and it was already announced by the time that Memphis played Cincinnati for the conference championship, and they played for him. They played hard for him. They ended up pulling it out, and And it was
a crazy game, back to back.
It really was.
Cincinnati.
It was good. They responded well against a very good Cincinnati team. But I think I'm with
the
you.
The Bearcats
here.
Could have won that one easily.
I think you know with Coach Franklin, and I think it's just a little next level for Penn State.
I agree, and I do think the letdown is possible. And even if there was no letdown, Penn State's got the better personnel.
Yep.
So, again, guys, so let's do a quick Final Four review, though. I mentioned it before. Let's get your quick leans, though. So, first championship playoff game, LSU minus 13 against Oklahoma, total of 75.5. Based on firepower alone, Oklahoma against a similar spread backdoored it against Alabama after getting crushed. I think they were down like 35-0 or 28-0. They came back, and Kyler Murray, and they got there. Hurts could do the same thing. Do you think this one's close at all?
Yeah, I think what you just described as the potential of happening again. I think LSU is clearly the best team in the country at this point. They're gonna jump out early, backdoor cover for Oklahoma, over.
All right.
That's exactly it. Bet LSU first half and Oklahoma for the game, and the second half, you know, take them at halftime. They backdoor cover.
Okay, and second playoff game is the PlayStation Fiesta Bowl. Again, we have Ohio State and Clemson. Ohio State opened as a slight favorite. We've seen actually reversal. The spread's already kind of flipped on that one. So your current spread's Clemson minus 2, total of 63.5.
What a game. I mean, this is a dream game. Ohio State still is the best team I've seen all year. And that being said, to borrow Kenny Barlow's favorite phrase, I'm taking Clemson right here just because I love Clemson.
Yeah, well, and in this case, too, again, given the recent history, it's hard to go against Clemson in a Final Four setting.
I think Clemson's just hitting on all cylinders right now. If you look at their last 5-6 games, they've just progressively getting better.
It's what they've done,
better,
like, the last 3 years. They start steamrolling people.
And this is the worst-case scenario for Ohio State, who I'm not an Ohio State fan. I hate them. And I think this is just the perfect matchup for everybody, and go Clemson.
All right, we're going to run off to a quick traffic break here. We'll be right back in just a minute on ESPN 94.5 FM. Welcome back to the Weeville Sports Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. Josh Nagel with Tommy Thompson and John Stevenson. It turns out Ken Barler will not be joining us tonight, as we just found out. Apparently he's got some important business to tend to here at the Cal Neva
Heavy
compound.
Is the head that wears the crown.
Most of our listeners are aware, but Ken's the vice president here, and sometimes business just takes precedent. He's got all kinds of stuff going on, but he did stop by to say hello briefly. As you guys know, I was saving the NFL for him because that's his thing. I kept thinking he might come by, and so at the last minute, he's not going to make it, so we must now jump into the NFL.
All right.
And unless, you know, we just want to skip the whole thing. But again, regarding bowl games, everybody, William Hill 20 for 20 bowl challenge. Jump in there, $20, pick 20 games against the spread. It's a fun contest, as we just heard on the commercial. You can get it on the William Hill app as well. And I'm sure we'll have more bowl game insight as the weeks go on here. So let's go week 15 NFL, and we'll just run through the slate here and see, guys, if we don't have a strong opinion, we can just pass and move on to the next one. So we got Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Detroit Lions. The Bucs are minus 3.5, total of 46, and that'll be the first game where – no thanks.
You don't have a big opinion on the Bucs or Lions?
No, not at all. Are the Lions still starting the kid from Purdue? I think they are.
Yeah, I have one thing to say about this game. If Jameis throws one more pick, he's going to tie Aaron Rodgers' lifetime record in 10 last year.
You know what's crazy, though? These late games lately, John, his numbers have been crazy. Winston, they'll be like 492 yards, 5 touchdowns, and 4 picks. I'm like, how can you even do that?
He's on my fantasy. He's my backup fantasy quarterback. I have Lamar Jackson, but he scores ridiculous every week.
His points have been crazy.
Yeah.
No opinion whatsoever, but it's because they're always down, and you got to do nothing but throw and eat up yards.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on to the next one. Philadelphia Eagles in that bizarre NFC East situation. The Eagles somehow came back from like 17-3. They beat the Giants. They're somehow still in this. So Eagles, it's minus 5 against the Redskins. I got to say, guys, Eagles, and obviously they've let me down all year. I picked a couple spots. Me and Ken got burned by them in our contest thing against the Patriots, a game they should have covered. And I'll admit, I jumped in there. It's kind of funny. Normally, I wouldn't even lay the points. But it seemed like there was so much sentiment last week for the Giants. And I kept hearing about Eli. I'm like, you know what? This would be funny, though, if the Eagles just had this get-right game and they covered. So I lost because I actually thought the Eagles might take advantage of the situation and smash them. They did not. Instead, they had to crawl to get to overtime. So I don't know how they won that one, but whatever. Eagles or Cowboys are going to end up making the playoffs. So you would think maybe.
Not necessarily.
Maybe
yet.
You can't trust them here. What, you don't think the Eagles or Cowboys are going to make
Redskins
it? One of them.
They're still alive.
They're mathematically alive. I don't see it happening, though. But here's one of those things where, again, as awful as the Eagles have been, I don't want the Redskins. I'll say that.
I'll take the Redskins plus 4.5.
Might as well until the Eagles prove they can cover. I think the Eagles have failed to cover in like 5 straight weeks.
How Eagles would this be to drop lose this game?
It would be very appropriate for this year.
Redskins playing with house money right now? These teams that are not – they're not going to win the division. But they love to spoil this Redskins and Eagles hate
and that's,
each other.
That's been the equation for that division for years of the lesser team ends up covering or winning and spoiling everything. And nobody wants to win this division.
Yeah, it's crazy the way this
But if I had to bet my own money, I'm not touching the Redskins. I'd have to go with the Eagles on the road.
Right. All right, so next game is Packers and Bears. Remember, they kicked off the whole NFL season with the Thursday night game at Chicago in which – with a similar spread here, actually it was the Bears minus 3.5, and the Packers won pretty convincingly, but that was where, I want to say it was like 17-7. This is where Trubisky looked really bad, and the offense
he's
looked
bad.
Pretty
well lately.
Yeah, and I thought the last couple of performances is what I thought we'd see all year. Aaron Rodgers had a good opening night. Now we see a reversal here, John, so we get more or less flip the spread. But similar stakes at hand, the Bears are still just hanging by a thread for their playoff flight. They're probably not going to make it. The Packers minus 4.5 against the Bears, total of 41. I got to say, the way the Bears have stepped up lately and the way this rivalry gone, that's a nice set of key numbers there. The points, I'll take the underdog.
I kind of like the Bears myself, and I've been trying to understand why I like the Bears, but they have been playing well. Trubisky's playing well. You know, we joke about Trubisky. I joke about him a lot with them past – trading up and passing on Mahomes and Deshaun, and it's just he has all the tools. He really does. Does he have a lot of weapons? I don't know if that's the case. There's a buddy of mine at work who's a big Bears fan from Chicago that just bitches about their offensive line every time that
you know, I would agree. The weapons are somewhat limited, but not terrible. They've had some injuries to a receiver. You know what what strikes me, though, every time I watch them, a guy who they use in kickoff return, who they just to I guess ignite the offense a little bit. Put him for some passing plays. It's Cordarrelle Patterson.
Yeah, yeah.
Why don't they put him in there more often? That guy runs like a deer.
He really
every
does.
Time he touches the ball, looks like he's going to go the distance.
Since he was drafted, since he was a Viking, he was a Patriot. He's running. He's playing running back for the Patriots.
Right. I'm like, how is this guy on like his third or fourth NFL team?
When you see him in a vacuum, you're like, oh my god, this guy is just
I agree.
A specimen.
Every time he touches the ball on a kickoff and like gets a lane, I'm like, thinking
he must be
gonna,
a knucklehead.
He's going to go. Must be it. Because it's one of those things that every team keeps releasing.
He looks like one of the most physically gifted players I've ever seen.
I agree. That's just so explosive. Every time he touches, like,
and
whoa.
Big.
Yeah. Like I said, yeah, he looks like just he's a huge guy.
He reminds me of Steven Jackson with the hair and just,
I just don't know why. The Bears started putting him in there for some screen passes, and he's been doing well. Like,
utilize
do
that
it
guy.
More. Yeah.
Utilize that guy. I'm with you.
But I agree. Trubisky, it's one of those things. Man, you never know. Yeah, the coaching, it's a tender relationship. It's just
I don't trust the Packers.
Yeah, and but he's come along pretty well. So, again, underdog.
I think that 4.5 is a little light. Packers at home. Aaron Rodgers has been just throwing the ball lights out lately. So, I'll take the 4.5. I'll lay that.
All right. So, let's Patriots against the Bengals. So, Patriots are minus 10 with a total of 41.5. Let's take a look at New England. We know it's lost a couple games, but it's a good team. So, they lost on the road at the Houston Texans, lost at home barely to the Chiefs. That was a competitive game. Could have gone either way. But as soon as the Patriots lose, again, you start coming out with those Brady done, this or that. Their weapons, haven't been there. And I'll say this, because some people who defend the Eagles, I think Carson Wentz has been terrible. They say, oh, none of his weapons are healthy. I'm like, you know what? Brady might take those same weapons. And no matter what, the Eagles have a couple of solid tight ends. They've got some receivers to throw to. But right now with the Patriots, it's basically Brady's down to Edelman and not much else. They're trying to work people into the equation. John, what do you think? There's no doubt a guy in his mid-40s, an NFL quarterback, is going to decline a little bit. But I do believe at this point it's more so the weapons. I mean, he doesn't have – in addition – in years past, you just give him the Edelman and the Gronkowski. That's all you need. Now all he's got is one of them.
Are they really filming the Bengals?
I don't know. Evidently, which to me is just crazy. When you got caught the way they did in the first spy game and you still did it, I mean, to me, that's just like, I mean.
I've always said this. They're like a wrestling heel where they cheat. Just to cheat.
Joe, what would you
they
think
really
about just your average
it.
Citizen? Exactly. But what if someone that you knew, if you just read a story, in the news or whatever, someone just embezzled like zillions of dollars from their company and they had like a gambling or some other problem. But years
ago, they go to 7-Eleven to steal
a
candy
bar. High-ranking accountant and somehow they got caught after a ton of years. Let's just say, maybe they paid a you know, Price, and then went to prison for a while or whatever. It just seems like they were turning their life around. And then you read, yeah, them getting arrested for more or less the same thing.
I thought,
if they just did it again, like, you would just be astounded. That's why I'm astounded at this.
Real quick, Tommy, I just love, as a Steeler fan, that regardless of this dynasty, which is probably the greatest dynasty in the history of the sport, that there's always going to be a black eye associated with it.
And when I first read the breaking news that they filmed it, and I started reading a little bit, it was a third party doing this, I thought
he was wearing a Patriot shirt.
It was just
Kraft production.
It's because of what
put
was
together a documentary.
Yeah. But I thought right. It was because of the situation and who the team was that they blew it out of proportion. Then when I read that they filmed a full quarter of just the Bengals coaching staff, I was like, okay,
it's what Ric Flair would have done in 1986 when he's trying to wrestle Dusty Rhodes. It's heel behavior when. Just to heal. That's what they're doing. Because nobody needs to film the Bengals. Well, the Wolfpack would honestly give the Bengals a run for their money.
But
can't beat the Rebels.
Are you just trying to make Matt Williams?
All right, so you guys like either team against the spread? I know. I mean, put it this way.
Give me the Patriots big.
Exactly.
Not only is it Patriots-Bengals, but they filmed them. They know exactly what they're going to do at all times. No, but honestly, I think it's when the Patriots go through stuff like this, they say, okay, here we go. And when their back's against the wall, when people are doubting them,
that's when they tend to come out
strong.
Keep
doubting Tom Brady. I thought Tom Brady was done in 2003.
And what's funny is if you watch these games, I think he's doing all right. It's just that I think, again, with the receiving core the way it is thin. Like the rookie N'Keal Harry, who has trouble breaking, line of scrimmage coverage. I mean, there is a lot of loopholes. What I've been surprised is they haven't pounded the run a little more. They've got the good running back, Sony Michel, Burkhead. It's like, why not just emphasize that and change your game plan? Belichick probably will.
He will. Who knows?
All right, they'll get in the playoffs, and they'll change it, and they'll – they'll beat Baltimore and surprise the world.
So next game here, Titans -3 against the Houston Texans. I got to tell you, I mean, the Texans, I shouldn't have been surprised. It came to me late, but God, what a huge letdown. Obvious. After they beat the Patriots, their biggest win of the year, you can never trust them to do it. So they end up getting blown out at home by the Broncos, which I'm just saying, as I watched it unfold, like, why didn't I see this coming? Biggest letdown spot in the world, and I didn't bet it.
Yep.
But I got to tell you, John, I didn't know what to think. If Ryan Tannehill had a mixed bag of results in Miami, like, not surprised to let him go. It was time to move on. And I felt Mariota, you know, they said, okay, you know, we've had enough. Bring him in here. You know, I knew he had been doing well. Just put it this way. Tell us all how he demolished the Raiders. I'm like, this guy looks like Dan Marino, the second coming. What happened to this guy? Like, I've never seen Tannehill play so good in his entire career. Apparently he's been playing this well since they stuck him in the lineup. And, yeah, I still don't want to believe the Titans.
I know.
But so just pass.
And Derrick Henry had a little hamstring problem, but he says he's good to go for Sunday. But man, hamstrings when you're running the ball like that, it can any play.
Henry's crazy, man. He's been getting 100 plus yards, 2 touchdowns every game.
And it's what's amazing is the ability for Alabama, when you look at Josh Jacobs and Mark Ingram still getting it done, their ability to churn out these running backs. I know Mark Ingram won the Heisman, but other than that, they kind of flew under the radar a little bit, especially Josh Jacobs. And it's just, it's pretty
because
awesome.
Jacobs was in the backfield with like 4 guys. Bo Scarborough is now getting time with the Lions.
Yeah.
It's like no one really knew who Jacobs was. Like, yeah, he was the hidden treasure who took no damage in college.
The Texans are such a Jekyll and Hyde team.
I know.
That
I think just like them to come back and win this one.
2 of the last 3 games, these two teams play each other. And this is going to be for the division. I think the Texans are just a better team. And it's not that I don't believe in the Titans, because I do. I think that is a quality team, especially the way Tannehill's playing, the way they're running the ball. I just think the Texans are better, and they go in there, and it's, you know, getting points. If they played this game last week, don't you think this line would be flipped coming off the Patriots game?
Maybe not flip, but it might be like
maybe close to a
1.5.
Close,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I like the Texans here just because of their Jekyll and Hyde nature. I think that they represent right here.
I think it's a big, big, big bounce back game for the Texans. The Texans were actually almost my play. One of my picks for last week against the Broncos. I was like, it's Denver. You know, what do you got to be worried about? Denver.
Denver's put 31 points on him in the first half. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Drew Lock's playing well.
That's the first score I saw in that game was 31.
At halftime.
Was it 31-0?
31, yeah. Or 31-3, I think.
Whatever it was.
So next game, Seahawks -6.5 at Carolina, who, you know, the Panthers just fired Ron Rivera. And I actually thought they might bounce back. you know, as soon as they fire somebody, usually they come out with at least one good performance. So I backed Carolina +3.5 against Atlanta last week, and that did not work out. They were just as bad without Ron Rivera.
How much do you hate the Falcons?
A lot. Because it's like, yeah, nothing I can do, John. I thought, oh, this is nice. Carolina will come out here. They'll probably give a good effort, and then they just get smashed. I'm like, all right, I'm done. That ruined a lot of – I mean, that ruined my parlays and everything else, teasers.
Josh and the Falcons have had quite a tumultuous relationship.
It's terrible. So I want nothing to do with this one, even though the Falcons aren't involved. I guess if it has some birds in there, I struggle. But Seahawks -6.5, I still find them having – it could be a down – your spot for the Seahawks here. Actually, they're coming off that pretty bad-looking loss to the Rams. They were due for that.
That was my number one play, was the Rams. That's
right.
Rams
were just such an easy spot to detect.
Easy.
I did well on that one also. But so what do you think? 6.5, though, on a road chalk. I would still take the underdog, I think, and lay a touchdown here.
Yeah, that's tough. I do expect a bounce back from the Seahawks, but, you know, you can dominate the game and not cover that 6.5, obviously.
Exactly. So that's just a ton of points in the NFL.
It really is. And, you know, Panthers at home here, and I don't know. Can you lay a touchdown here, Tommy?
Not a chance. I mean, you got McCaffrey. You got him at home. The stat you threw out last week about the Seahawks just kind of being an over-inflated team with a great record.
They had the same record going into last week as the 49ers, and the 49ers had outscored their opponents by 130 more points than the Seahawks had.
Yep. And that's why, I mean, you give me McCaffrey at home, I'll take that a touchdown all day long.
Yep.
Let's go through one more before we go to our final break here.
His dad just got hired as coach of North Carolina.
I heard about
Northern
that.
Colorado.
Northern Colorado.
Ed. So Chiefs -9.5 against the Broncos, who are coming off that upset with Drew Lock at the helm. Yep. 45.5 is your total. So Chiefs -9.5, total 45.5 in your Arrowhead. I got to say, the Broncos, it's a nice little resurgence that they're showing here, but I think this is another one where, like the Raiders a couple weeks ago, I think the Chiefs just smash, right through them.
Playing good D. Drew Lock looks pretty good. I think he's got a future in this league. Chiefs win this game 46-11.
Yeah, I think the Chiefs cover the total by themselves. And if you would have told me 6 weeks ago that the Chiefs' defense would be playing as well as they have these last three games, I would have laughed you out of the building. But I think that's just an unamazing combination.
Did you say Chiefs' defense?
Chiefs' defense.
Nice. I've noticed it's improved quite a bit also. All right, let's go off to our final break. We'll be right back.
Those white claws are strong.
For the final segment of the William Hill Sports Show, ESPN 94.5 FM. All right, welcome back to the last segment of the William Hill Sports Show, ESPN 94.5 FM. Again, Josh Dingle, John Stevens, Tommy Thompson. We're about halfway through the NFL slate, but I think we have more games to go than we've covered, so let's just get straight to it. Giants against Dolphins, Giants -3.5, total of 47. Last week with Eli in there, put up a nice little performance for the first half, nothing in the second half. I actually think he probably goes out with a win. I'd take the Giants if I had to.
Eli's last home game ever, for the Giants at least.
Yeah.
Give me the Giants.
Giants.
All right, next one that we talked about during the break, which has been flexed into the Sunday night game because there's more at stake than you would have thought on paper or whatever a few weeks ago. So you got Bills and Steelers. And Steelers -2, both these teams, with all the adversity the Steelers had, you would have thought that, whatever, it's rebuilding here. But they're in that playoff hunt, and the Bills are right there, too, as the AFC wildcard team. So Steelers -2, total of 36.5. The Steelers keep finding ways to win. The Bills, I said predictably, I mean, they had the letdown against the Ravens. Couldn't beat them. That would have been a huge win for them.
Is that a letdown, or is it just the best team in football?
I mean, a 7-point game. They did the best. It was pretty nice showing. But the Bills are also an upstart team, so this is a big game for playoff consideration.
I think the Bills are better than the Steelers.
You would take them on a road environment in this spot?
I don't know at that point. Mike Tomlin, his record in primetime games at home is just unbelievable. Never lost on Monday night. I don't know what it is on Sunday night, but it's pretty good. They were in the color rush. They've never lost in the color rush as well. Juju is out again. He went a little too hard yesterday in practice and re-aggravated his injury. So he's out. James Conner is going to play.
Okay.
So that helps. That helps tremendously. I like the Bills here. I think if the Bills win this game, they are in the playoffs. I think the Bills are just a better team. Josh Allen, the Steelers' defense plays great. They create a lot of turnovers to get to the quarterback. Josh Allen is just a playmaker. He's made a lot of plays. I think the Bills are better than the Steelers. Give me the Bills here.
Yeah, I was hoping John would find a way to talk me into betting the Steelers, but there's no chance. I honestly thought this line would be flipped, and even though they're on the road, the Bills would still be favored by 2. So you're going to give me points, I'll take them all day long with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, I love duck hunters, but sometimes the old rubber band's being stretched, Josh.
I think it could be in Pittsburgh's case because right, they just seem to keep somehow getting
They'll
by.
Still make the playoffs.
All right, next game here we got Raiders against the Jags, -6.5 at home in Oakland there. You know what's weird is last week I thought was a good spot for them. Ken and I had the Raiders +3 against Tennessee in our contest. And I was, oh, man, they were trading touchdowns early on.
Kenny had it over, too.
I thought they had a, you know, a chance, and then suddenly it got out of hand. And I was stunned. I didn't know how well Tannehill, I mean, that offense was just on all cylinders there. But here you go back to this situation. It's kind of funny because not as if I lost all faith in the Raiders, but I don't still think they're good enough to be laying a touchdown. As bad as the Jaguars have been, I'd still say give me a touchdown.
Jaguars have lost their last, what, 4 games by 17-plus?
Yeah.
The last game ever in Oakland.
-6.5, total 45.
Raiders are better than the Jaguars. Give me the Raiders in a whitewash. Let's go, Raiders. Hate the Raiders. Love going to Raider games. It sucks that they're not going to be there anymore. Let's go, Raiders. They're going to win this game by 19 points.
Yeah, there's no chance I take the Jaguars in this situation.
All
I
mean,
right. Oakland, that black hole is going to be just crazy. Raiders big time.
Right. Browns, Cardinals. The Cardinals, despite a nice start, they've fallen apart lately. They've been getting smashed at home. We just mentioned the Steelers did it to them, the Rams. So now you got the Browns coming in there. Browns -2.5 at Arizona, 49.5 is the total.
Oh, man.
I just passed, by the way.
It's mostly a pass. I don't know. This is a match. You know, obviously, when you look at the matchup of Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield, that's pretty cool. That's pretty intriguing. Browns on the road. Much better team. Give me the Browns.
I'll take the Browns.
All right. Next one, Falcons at the 49ers. So we have 49ers coming off that one of the game of the year performances against the Saints. That was really entertaining. They got the best of them. They did well on that road trip. Could have beat the Ravens too. Didn't. But they're back home against the Falcons, -10.5, 48.5. As bad as the Falcons have been, they've come on strong lately. Do the Niners have a letdown, possibly?
I don't think so. I think going back home here with a chance – If they win this, do they clinch a playoff spot? Right.
They win today, or the Ram, or they win Sunday, they can, or the Rams lose. They clinch the playoff spot.
You ready for the kiss of death? I think the Niners are the best team in football.
Thank you.
I think they are. Just that win, what they've showed in that win, that close loss to the Ravens. This team is in the close loss to the Seahawks.
You have a healthy Robbie Gould and decent weather. I think the Niners win that game in Baltimore.
They might. They absolutely might have. The way Bosa's playing, he's just such a difference maker. Makes everything around him go, kind of like T.J. Watt in Pittsburgh. I think the Niners cover this, and they cover it easily. Your Falcons, so you don't like the Falcons here?
I am going to pass. No, forget it. Well, there's just no way. The Falcons being involved just makes it makes me stay away.
You know, Shanahan going against his old team, not that it's a revenge game because he left on his own accord and everything, but I just think the Falcons are going to be outmatched. I really think that coaching staff is going to gear them up because the Niners still have the Rams and the Seahawks after this game. So they don't want to.
So you're thinking Falcons have the points? No, or you like
no, Niners? No. I think the Niners are gonna run the table.
I'm just saying the only other argument I would make in similar spots where they're same favorite against the Cardinals after having played a tough game. Remember, Jimmy G threw a bunch of picks.
Yeah.
They let the Cardinals stick around. I mean, against lesser teams, they've had that win the big games are sandwiched in between. But whatever, it's a pass. The next one that has this, again the playoff implications and a bit of an odd line because of that. The Rams we know have seemingly turned it around. They've been on fire lately. The Cowboys not so much. But it's Rams -1 with a total of 49. So since they're so clearly going in opposite directions, to me the Rams seem like such an obvious play. Because of that, I'm taking Dallas. Only because it's like, why isn't it the Rams -3? I think it's telling you something. The Cowboys
this
have
is
to
the
be,
cow- this
it
is
has
the
to cow- be the play.
This is the Cowboys' first win against an above 500 team.
Be.
Here it is.
I would almost like to wait to bet that game after the Washington Eagles game just to kind of formulate my opinion on that. Because if Washington wins, Cowboys are going to win. If Eagles win, I think Cowboys lose.
Right.
How are those two things correlated?
I don't know.
It just happens that way where
the Cowboys sitting there in the locker room like, yeah,
right,
no,
let's play
hard
now.
Done.
Yeah,
exactly.
Because the Cowboys are going to need to play harder that game. You know,
they're
going to
play as
up.
Hard as they're going to go 100 no matter what.
It's just funny, though. I just feel like the Rams are going to be the number one public consensus team, and that doesn't bode well. But let's go to the game that I think ended up being dumped on the flex here that went back to an afternoon game. Vikings-Chargers. You have the Vikings coming on, which, by the way, I saw the futures odds the other day. I was like, is there any value in the Super Bowl? Let me take a peek here. Vikings were offered at 25-1 to win the Super Bowl, and I got to think there was some value in that.
Yeah.
Even though, of course, the Saints and Niners, everyone's above them. Like, this team's capable of going on a run. They're in the championship game just a couple years ago. I think they're right there. But regardless, and we know what's happened with the Chargers, complete letdown versus expectations. But Vikings, but they're getting some respect here because they've been coming on lately. This tells you, I mean, it's close to a pick 'em. Vikings -2 with a total of 45. It's one of those things, though. You know, on paper it looks good. This is actually kind of a Charger spot.
Yeah, you remember the spot when the Packers went there a few weeks ago?
This is similar.
I think it's very similar.
I think so, too.
And I love, did you hear the 90-yard touchdown when Philip Rivers, your boy Philip Rivers, was mic'd up?
No.
Last game. And he threw a 90-yard touchdown, and he was talking smack to one of the opponents.
Oh, did you see? I saw some video of him the other day, though, when they were getting smashed by the Steelers, and he got upset and was, like, really going after some Steelers guy. It's like a scoreboard, pal.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Who are you going after?
Yeah, exactly.
They threw into one of his many picks.
That was Cameron Sutton.
Yeah,
or Mike, it was Mike.
Yeah, he's, like, grabbing him by the collar and yelling at him, like, what do you have to say in
this
situation?
Just Rivers. That's the fire that dude plays with. But I like the Chargers here. The Vikings are much better, but I like the Chargers in this spot.
I'll take the Vikings in this situation. Better right, team,
great.
Better coach, better
more
quarterback.
More Jameson.
All right, Monday night game. So we've got the Colts against the Saints wrapping up the slate here. So Monday night Saints, we know coming off that crazy back and forth. But they came up short against the Niners. But now they're going to be laying 9 against the Colts, who, after a somewhat promising start, have kind of fallen apart. -9 and a total of 46. I got to tell you, unless the Colts played, I mean, that's a lot of points to lay, but as the bounce-back scenario goes, I'd like New Orleans.
Yeah, I think you nailed it right there, that bounce-back right here. It's time for them to assert themselves, the Saints.
New Orleans getting to play at home. I think they win by 2 touchdowns.
All right, so that takes care of our Pro Football Week 15
slate. I told you we'd get right
through
it.
The Rapid Fire Edition, and we did make it through just barely. But if you want to get our picks, we're going to do – we used to give them out on the show. But now
we'll post them later.
Gathering on the Facebook page. So, again, Kenny B's ESPN Sports Handicapping.
I am 13-2-1 in my last 15,
put them there, which guarantees an 0-5 weekend. No, I'm saying
– self-promoting.
That's what I'm waiting. No, I mean, that's important information, right?
It could be.
It's the Hawk.
Ride the hot streak.
What a Hawk vision. It's a Hawk hot streak.
All right, so if you want to ride his hot streak, go right ahead. We'll get all the other picks there. And, again, the William Hill College Football Contest is out. You can start playing those cards anytime now. We will come back with more bowl coverage next week for sure. So that wraps up this week's edition of the William Hill Sports Show. Join us next week on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Thanks for joining us for the William Hill Sports Show. Be sure to tune in again next Friday at 5 p.m. for all the action. This is KUUB Sun Valley, ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.